Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Strength and Recovery Podcast, sponsored by the Alumni Association of Recovery Centers of America. I'm your host, Jay Rodenbush, the Director of Alumni Engagement for RCA, and today I am sitting down with Tammy Marinaccio. We are at RCA Capital Region. This is an incredible facility right outside of Washington, D.C. in Waldorf, Maryland. And I just love coming here, Tammy. I really do. It's one of my favorite places to come. I think the staff is really special. Everyone speaks and everyone just is so welcoming. And there's just a real friendliness and a real warmth when you walk in the doors, from the receptionist to just to all the recovery support specialists and just everyone, really. So thank you for the work you do. And if you're an alum of RCA Capital Region, you know Miss Tammy because she is a force at this facility. Her groups, I've sat in on Tammy's groups, they're incredible. She just has this passion and life, and she's direct, which I love. And she's going to get you on board, whether you want it or not. She is going to pull and get you get you where you need to be. So thank you for your work, Tammy, and thanks for all you've done for our alums. You've really kept them together and worked with our alumni coordinator here, who is L'Oreal, who does an outstanding job and just been a real blessing to the Alumni Association. So thank you.
Thank you, Jay. My name is Tammy, and I am, yes, a grateful recovering addict and alcoholic. And I want to thank a God of my understanding for allowing me to be here with you guys this morning, clean and sober. And I, too, want to thank L'Oreal, the alumni coordinator, and Jay for coming down. You know, you said something that stuck out to me with, you know, what the energy is here. And I really feel like when I came to work here at RCA, their mission to save a million lives, it gave me passion. Mm. It gave me heart and soul. And that's what I feel like our Capital Region facility brings to the table, is a passion and just the mere ability to change a person's life one person at a time. You know, saving a million lives is extremely a big burden to put on a person. But when your love and your compassion and your empathy play significant in the facility that you work, it's trickling.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to kind of just flow into that family orientation that a lot of our patients lose on their way into recovery.
I often say, you know, we are loaned people's loved ones when it's no longer advisable that they're stepping in, and you loan them to us to let us kind of pour into them when you need that professional touch, when you need people who are in the trenches. And it's not just a career for the people in these buildings. This is a real calling to help people find life again. How did you come to RCA?
Well, you know, I originally was in the car with my roommate, and she said to me, she was like, they're building a rehab facility over there. She's like, and I want you to work there. She's like, I want you to learn everything in there, from cleaning toilets to saving lives and everything in between. This is what is going to be good for you. But coming out of active addiction, you have so much shame and guilt, and you really don't think that anybody's ever going to understand your journey. And, you know, there's so much wreckage, Jay. Mm-hmm. I can begin to tell you exactly how hard it was for me to get to a place where I could be that person that families would feel secure in leaving their loved ones with. Because from the second they come in the front door until the moment they leave, and then their journey after this, I play a part in their lives. Mm-hmm. I become, you know, that person for them that says, you know, no matter how hard the failure might seem at the time, it's the fight.
Absolutely.
That counts. And I look at them and I'm just without judgment because someone did that for me.
And will you talk to us about that? What was life like in active addiction for you?
Well, you know, I couldn't begin to tell my story in one setting, but I will say this. I am 51 years old. On February the 20th of 2016, we had a lot of stuff going on in Baltimore. We had the Freddie Gray Wars going on, and I believe that on that day, God stepped in and he intervened for me. After spending 35 years in active addiction, I spent 10 years in Women's Jessup's Women's Correctional Facility, almost day for day, 9 years, 8 months, and 22 days. I came home in 2009 after spending all of my 30s incarcerated to an adult child who I had been out of her life for close to 10 years. So that was a really difficult task to begin with. You don't learn how to live life on life's terms in prison. It's a place where you're confined physically and you can have the chemical removed. And so I really believe that if I could just have space between me and it, that I would want all the things that I've wanted, you know, as a child that I inspired to be when I would grow up. And no one ever voted me most likely to become an addict or an alcoholic, yet I did.
And that's because, I mean, I'm sitting here today. You're incredibly talented. You can walk in a room, people gravitate toward you. I mean, I'm sure this didn't seem like it was going to be your destiny to live a life of an addict.
Absolutely not. You know, and like I said, when I came home in 2009, you know, I had went into what they would consider like a halfway facility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got my feet wet with what recovery actually looked like. But I still had that mentality, Jay. Mm. I was in the fight of my life every day for 9 years, 8 months, and 22 days. I didn't come home and know how to live. Mm-hmm. And the next 2.5 years that I was able to maintain, a level of sobriety, it was sobriety. It was not, you know, the clean time, you know, that went with recovery. And so the first bad thing that happened in my life, and when I say bad thing, I mean love. Mm. Because if you've spent 35 years of your life under the influence of some substance or another, do you really know how to love? Mm. Were any of my relationships ever real? And I thought to myself, you know, I love my daughter.
Yeah.
I love my daughter. But I was so caught up in the continuing grips every day that I loved what it brought to me more than her. And when I came home and I thought, you know, I'm going to rebuild this relationship with my child, I didn't have a relationship with me.
Wow.
I had no idea who I was. I had never been sober long enough to have any life of substance. And so everything that I had accumulated in that 2.5 year period was gone in 2.5 months.
And you said you felt like it was God's intervention. Were you referring to the time you were locked up, that was an intervention?
I like to look at the intervention happening later in my life. I believe that there was a separation period. A lot of people will say, you know, I believe, you know, God sent, you know, me getting locked up. That would have been, you know, God that did that. No, I broke the law, Jay.
Mm.
I lied, I cheated, I stole, I manipulated. I was in active addiction, everything that drugs and alcohol are cunning, baffling, and powerful and insidious. I was that person attached to that chemical. Mm-hmm. I became exactly what addiction says that it brings you to in desperation, jails, institutions, and death. And at the very end of, you know, coming out of active addiction this time, after spending, you know, being arrested 63 times and having 43 convictions under your belt, you know, you believe that there is no destiny for you other than to live and die to the use of drugs. Mm-hmm. And so in 2016, when, you know, on that day, I was physically arrested twice. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt that there was an intervention going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was so sick, Jay. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, I was so broke that I honestly didn't care if I died. But that happened. There was an overdose that day. Life changed for me in ways I never dreamed. I had never physically used enough drugs to where I had overdosed. And I just can't tell you what the feelings were when I came to from that, in words that I think could even describe the lust for life at that point. Mm. I don't know where it came
from. So there was a moment when you said, I want to live.
Yes. Because just 20 minutes.
I don't
want to
go out this way.
Yes. Because just 20 minutes before that, I was so tired of the life that I didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
But for that one moment of clarity, I had to be Narcan'd 3 times.
Oh.
And I see my daughter's face, and I see her having to identify my body, my lifeless body, and what that would have done to her.
Mm.
For the first time, I realized that I did love her. And it was at that moment that I realized that I didn't love myself.
Wow.
That was the hardest part of my journey, was realizing that I was never going to be able to love her the way that I wanted to at that moment until I could learn to love myself. And at that point, I didn't know if it was even possible.
Mm-hmm.
It was the scariest, hopeless feeling I had ever experienced, because for the first time I was thinking of living and not dying.
And where do you find the courage at that point to say, to find the life, to find recovery?
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, the next few years were not easy. It was very difficult, one trial, one tribulation after another. At the end of active addiction, a lot of us end up homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we end up in living environments that are, you know, not conducive to our recovery. And at that point in my life, I was living in an environment where there were multiple people around me, maybe not directly in the home, but in the, you know, in the vicinity, because it was like a farm, and people that were still using. And, you know, I am in the fight of my life,
mm-hmm.
because for the first time in 45 years, because I was 45 at the time, I had a desire to live. And there was nothing around me that could divert me from me staying sober. That meant not the sickness this time, not the shame, not the guilt. Nothing from my past had enough power over my present for me not to be able to embrace that. That was the gift.
Tammy, I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm going, okay, you said 35 years active addiction. You're 45 when you have this, you know, this. You start your journey into sobriety. That put you at 10 when you first started using?
Actually, 9.
Wow.
At 9 years old, you know, I think that as, you know, as I started to really embrace my sobriety, let me fast forward and then rewind. About 2.5 years in to my sobriety, I was finally in a safe environment. And I, for the first time, I started to acknowledge why I ever used and what I was running from. And so at 9 years old, I like to think that that's where the trauma in my life, and I was impacted the most. And I remember my school calling my grandparents, and my mom was an absent parent. She was in and out of our lives, you know, an addict herself. And so my grandparents were the most of stability that we had. But of course, my grandfather is a police officer and an alcoholic. And there are people, you know, in and out of the house. And, you know, my family's it's like one big panic of a mess. But I was, you know, it running from the trauma that was taking place because of the fear that if you share what's really going on, no one will believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And as a 9-year-old, I started realizing that, you know, I could drink because it was so available. You know, it was on the edge of every table. I remember drinking, and there would be cigarette butts in the cans of the Pabst Blue Ribbon. But the feeling that I would get after I would vomit and throw up and all of this, I could go to sleep and not be afraid.
Mm.
And so I realized then that my life changed. I wasn't a little girl anymore.
Yeah.
Now my grandparents are being notified that I smell like alcohol, and although I didn't drink that morning, I had been drinking the night before, and you know, I couldn't say to them, you know, well, I drink one because it's here, and two, because, you know, things are happening to me at night and you guys don't know about it. I can't tell my mother because my mother is, you know, she's messed up. She's never herself. And the only like real memories that I have growing up would be that, you know, my mom would be so messed up 1 week out of every month for as long as I could go back and remember. And I, you know, there's just so many traumatic things that happened between the ages of 9 and 13 when I left home.
And how important is it for all of us to understand that so much of addiction is rooted in trauma or mental health, or there's just a real, I mean, we've got to break the stigma. And when you look at someone and they're, you know, you see them in active addiction, it's really easy to judge that. But when you look at a 9-year-old kid who's going through trauma, it's so much easier to tap into the compassion. How do we get that message out there?
You know, Jay, it's not until like the last, I want to say 2.5 years where I really started to embrace that other side of the coin. I was able to maintain a level of sobriety up until about 4 years, and I had a mental break. I work in the field, and I've been here at RCA, like I said, since March 11th of 2019. I was a little over 2 years sober at that point. I celebrate my clean date on March 11th of 2017 because that's where the journey began. But I got to tell you that it wasn't until 2020 when I came to work one day and I could no longer function normally. I had a mental break. I loved doing what I was doing, but there was this other stuff that had me locking my door at night and had me revisiting memories of being 9 again and all that fear and shame. And the only time it was ever removed was when I was in a room full of people that I could tell the truth to, that I wouldn't be judged by. And I started to realize that, you know, there was something that was wrong with me, that was broken, that needed to be fixed. And no, I may not have ever been able to do it in the form of full repair, but there was a process of recovery. And recovery for me was both sides of the coin: my mental health, my depression, my anxiety, my fears. And so I came in and I talked to a therapist that was on site, and I told her, I was like, look, you know, I don't know what's going on, but I got all these feelings and these emotions. And she, you know, is geared around mental health, and she gave me a recommendation, you know, for someone outside of here for me to call. And that's me being honest and saying to you that this process hasn't been easy. And it wasn't until I'm almost 4 years sober that I start acknowledging the trauma.
That is so powerful.
So that to me is like the epiphany of allowing a person their process. I can't imagine expressing myself in a way that's going to have a patient in 30 days be able to
You had to get sober, had to live in recovery a while before you were ready.
Yes.
To face maybe all of that from
and to be able to share about it. To say to the patient that's sitting in the room that says, you don't understand what it was like for me when I was a kid. And because you don't always share about it, they don't think you know about it. Mm-hmm. But when you start talking about your trauma and it becomes more real for you, by that time in my sobriety, I'm seeing a psychiatrist now. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a therapist and I'm getting honest. But 30 days in treatment, it's like the you know, stabilizing part where you're medically stabilizing a patient to be able to feel these emotions and these feelings.
And there's going to be a lot of hard work in front of that.
Exactly. And that honesty that goes along with it, the being able to stand in front of a room full of people and know that you may cry and not be afraid of crying, allows them to cry and not be afraid of crying.
And that's freedom
at its core. And I think that RCA offers that. I can't speak for, you know, everybody else, but the doors of RCA were like the doors of heaven for me. And I am grateful on so many levels to not just be a part of the solution today, but to not look at the fight as a failure.
Wow. talk to me a little bit about the fight. I was privileged to hear a little bit about your story. And you were working this job and things got a little crazy. Can I use that term?
Absolutely.
Will you talk to us about that? I think it's fascinating because we're sitting on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And the
crazy thing is that sometimes when a person starts talking, they'll look at the book, right? And they'll be like, you know, I have to remind a person, don't open up my book at 200 pages and think you know me, because 35 years of active addiction, Jay, that was the fight of my life.
Wow.
I cannot imagine feeling what I have right now 30 years ago and not wanting to part with it, because it took every single thing that I went through to get to where I'm at. I've had, you know, little to no education, which brings me to, you know, how some of the things that took place in my life happened. And, you know, the addict and the alcoholic's mind is brilliant, because the life that you have to live for the way that you live it and for the length of time that you live it.
Keeping all those balls in the air.
Absolutely. So, I want to say it was 1996. I want to share this story with you because I think it's significant for people to really see how the mind works, mm-hmm. right? I had an eighth grade education, Jay. Okay. I completed the eighth grade. I went to ninth grade. I quit school about 2 weeks in. I stopped going. My grandparents had no idea what was going on, but I didn't care because I was already smoking pot and drinking, and I was escaping the things that were happening in my life, because by that time, I'm in an abusive relationship with a man who's twice my age. I have a child, a little girl, and I have little to no life skills whatsoever. All I know is I don't want my daughter to be raised like I was raised.
And you've got grit, and you've got just kind of this raw talent and this personality, right?
And this drive.
Yes.
And so I'm like, you know, I want it. And so I get this job at the lottery, you know, and I'm working for the Maryland State Lottery, and I'm delivering the scratch-off tickets. But I start using. I'm in a car accident, and I graduated from drinking and smoking weed to taking pain medication. Now, in the 90s, it was looked at much, much different.
Absolutely.
You know, the doctor would give you this pain medication for long periods of time, and then all of a sudden they cut you off. And I was working at a restaurant before I got the job at the lottery, and I met up with a young lady one day, and the young lady told me that I was sick. And I was like, what do you mean sick? And she introduced me to heroin in 1996. Mm. So by 1998, I'm a full-blown heroin addict. I have a daughter who, at that point, I have my daughter is born in 90. So this is 98 by this time. She's 8 years old. I'm working in a gas station. I get a job at the lottery. You know, I'm making like $16 an hour. That's back then. That's great money. I'm loving it, but I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and $16 an hour isn't going to cut it.
Absolutely not.
To get you what
not
you
when
feel
you're
need.
In a relationship with an addict and an alcoholic who is beating the crap out of you, you know, and you're running from your past, you're running from your future, you're caught up in this lifestyle that heroin took and hid.
Mm-hmm.
And I became so good at lying and cheating and stealing and manipulating. And I'm in and out of AA through these things because, you know, the boyfriend is an alcoholic. So, you know, he's got a few DWIs. And so we're embracing meetings, and I'm hearing him saying there are these things about, you know, more alcohol than drugs back then. But later, you know, you're introduced to some other things. So I knew that there was always hope and help. I just didn't know how to get to it. So I'm working for the lottery. They give me a route. They want me to deliver the scratch-off books. I get this little small period of clean time, and I'm introduced to scratch-off tickets. So my mind is racing a million miles a minute. You know, I have this great opportunity to steal from each business a little bit so that no one knows. Mm-hmm. And Jay, I'm not going to lie to you. I went from 1998 until 1999 stealing $2.2 million from the lottery, okay, in increments. And then I get sober in 99 and I want to tell the truth. Because now I've resigned from the lottery. I'm not working there anymore.
And so are you wanting to make amends?
I want to make amends.
Oh, my word.
But there's a process.
But you got away with it.
I got away with it.
Oh, my goodness.
I had resigned from the lottery. I told my dad what was going on. And a lot of his businesses were affected by this because he franchised Shell stations.
Okay.
And so as a lottery rep, you know, you would...
You knew the process well enough.
Process, yes. And so...
And you're brilliant.
And you got an addict mind. I'm smart beyond words because I've been taking care of myself my whole life. I've been protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was never there. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My grandmother was abused by every single person in her life, including me. You know, you have this mentality that I can get it this way. Why work for it?
Mm.
And so that was another really big thing. I ended up being indicted on that charge.
Because you go back and you tell on yourself.
I tell. And the thing is I probably...
And a lot of people would have said, what you doing?
They thought I was crazy.
Absolutely. But you had to, right?
Like, I did. Because the person that mattered the most at that time, you know, to me was the fact that I... Not telling the truth meant that they would eventually, you know, continue an investigation and what would happen later. Mm-hmm. And having someone in my life who's saying, look, I'm going to support you. We'll get you a lawyer. We'll do all these things. And Jay, if I could have just stopped using when this happened, if I would have just not picked up, I probably wouldn't have spent one day in jail ever.
And I know 2.2, all gone.
All gone. Everything to drugs. The state of Maryland came in. They, you know, they took everything that was in my home. You know, my daughter and I were, you know, we're out. We're in the streets. Now we have nothing. I have nothing to show for anything. And the truth is I deserved it.
Yeah.
I deserved it. And I, you know, now as, you know, as a woman, you know, who is living the kind of life that she earns.
Mm.
And I look back and I'm like, I'm mad at people for coming in and saying, you know, my kid couldn't go to graduation this year because I couldn't afford to pay for her gown because my business went bankrupt. I couldn't look at stuff like that. And, you know, I believe that I ended up going to prison primarily because of my ignorance. Because you don't say things to people that you've stole that much money from, how you lost everything and somehow you needed to get a house and a car when you should be in an apartment and riding the bus.
Mm.
The ignorance and the arrogance that addiction leaves a person at says that you feel like you're never going to be able to recover, but recovery is possible. I'm sitting here across from you today living my best life, Jay, and I'm not rich with money. I'm rich with love, compassion, empathy, and the full understanding that I can help one person every day says to me that I am worthy today.
It's an incredible story.
It's not an easy one to talk about, but it's the best thing that's ever happened to me is that I have that experience to bring to the table with strength and hope. I also wanted to add in real quick that I am a full-time student now.
Good for you.
In my first year of my associate's program, I have right now gotten scholarships. You know, I've been blessed. I have made
life
the dean's
beyond
list.
Your wildest dreams.
Absolutely. You know, made
and
the
that's
dean's
a recovery
list.
Term. People say that it
it's
doesn't
truth.
Mean what it always. It doesn't mean the life living on the beach with the fancy stuff.
Yes.
Right. It's not the materialistic stuff at that point. Right.
I think that, you know, I used to think that being rich meant having a lot of stuff. And when I realized that the richness came from their spirit, it changed how I viewed things. And my gratitude today is not for one single thing that I have in my life. It's for the ability to be able to speak the truth, feel the truth, and inspire the truth.
Talk to a family who's maybe listening in, or someone who just wants to understand. Maybe they've got somebody in their life who's going through this, and it maybe it surprised them. Maybe they're like, how do I help? What am I up against? What do you say to families?
You know, I here at RCA, I am not a therapist, but at, you know, being the recovery instructor for multiple of years, I've come across a lot of families. Our patients that say to me, I would love for my family member to speak to you so you could express to them where I'm at, because I don't think they understand it through me, because I'm the person that's right in the, in caught up in the grips of it. Well, first of all, Jay, this is a family disease. Mm. And the entire family is affected. And I never realized it to the capacity that I do now, being the mother of an adult alcoholic. And I love my daughter. Don't get me wrong. I love my daughter with all of my being. But I had to start embracing other programs to be able to, you know, other support groups like Naranon and Al-Anon, and go into these meetings.
Tell the listeners what those...
So Naranon is where people go that have family members of drugs and or alcohol. Al-Anon is the exact same type of program, but geared more around the alcoholic. And it's a program, and it's like AA meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous. These programs are also anonymous, and you can go there, and they're going to share what it feels like to be a family member, to be a loved one, to have a loved one who struggles the way that, you know, we do, and to not understand it.
And somebody would say, you've been there. You don't need these meetings. You're in the field. But how important has that been?
Oh my goodness, Jay, I cannot tell you, because, you know, I can freely give to my patients because they're here. They walk to that front door. Like you said, we borrow them. Mm-hmm. We do, Jay. They turn their will over once they walk through the doors of RCA. Once you give them your phone, your keys, and your wallet, you just turned your will over to a power greater than you, and it would be us here at RCA. And we do also have Al-Anon and Naranon meetings that we offer to our patients through our outpatient program. So, you know, that is where I was actually introduced to my very first one, was recommending it to a family member of one of our patients, and I decided that I would go. And yes, I have been told, well, you're in recovery, you should get it more than anybody. The difference is this: my daughter doesn't want it from me. My patients want it from me. So I need to be able to navigate and get the resources in front of my daughter to where I'm not the person giving it to her, because the closest doesn't, you know, they doesn't always have the best answers and options.
And there's something special, and I think that's why the Alumni Association is so powerful, about going through something with someone at the same time. That shared experience to be able to sit in a room and have fellowship with people who are going through it with you right now.
Absolutely. And, you know, the alumni program means a lot to me. Through COVID, it was a really, we really struggled a lot with, you know, what we would do for patients once they walked out the door. You know, people were learning how to use Zoom and learning how to use a phone that wasn't a flip phone, you know, and all these things. And so the alumni program opens up the door for our patients to be able to come back if they fail. Absolutely. It also opens up the door for them to have a safe place to come. Every week on Thursday nights here at Capital Region, and you know this, we have our alumni meeting, which, by the way, went from having one or two people to having some nights 50 and 60 people that want to come back here because this was their foundation. And the alumni program, to me, is the sacred piece of what RCA offers, is because once we've treated you mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, we continue to treat you through your recovery once you walk out the doors, because alumni is forever.
And keep you connected.
Connected. They say that the opposite of addiction is connection, and there is no doubt in my mind that that is a fact.
It goes from isolation to fellowship.
Absolutely. And fellowshipping, you know, people say, well, if you're not an addict or an alcoholic, you couldn't possibly understand. One of my closest friends to me is not an alcoholic or a drug addict, but she sure has been affected. So, you know, you don't always have to have someone who's been, you know, through it to understand it, because education and personal experience kind of almost chalk up the idea that I'm here for you and you're here for me. And, you know, we can't go back and change the past. The future's not promised, and the moment is the present. It's a gift.
Tammy.
It's so worth it.
This has really been inspiring today, and I'm so thankful.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
We always end with favorite recovery quote, and I'm putting it on the spot because I didn't tell you that in advance, but do you have one?
I do. My favorite recovery quote is, yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery, and today the present is a gift.
I love it.
Absolutely. One of my favorite quotes.
And it sums up your experience so well.
It does. You know, the other key is keep coming back. It works if you work it. And it won't if you don't. You know, I believe that a large part of who I am is because of Recovery Centers of America. And I want to thank them.
Thank you so much.
And I want to thank you, Jay, for having me today. It means a great deal to me to be able to sit down and talk about my experience and not feel shame about it.
Absolutely.
So that is a great, overwhelming feeling of gratitude for, you know, what you do and what RCA offers.
Thank you for all your work. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day, listeners.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today for the Strength and Recovery podcast. Real people, real experiences, real hope. This podcast is presented by the Alumni Association of Recovery Centers of America. If you're interested in learning more, visit rcaalumni.com. Here, you can fill out our web form to make sure you're receiving our daily recovery emails and are notified of special events. The Alumni Association of RCA exists to connect individuals to an active recovery community. It is our goal to work with alumni to help them succeed, belong, and ultimately serve others. We help our alumni succeed by hosting more than 120 recovery support meetings per month, with both virtual and in-person offerings of big book studies, speaker meetings, beginners meetings, Monday through Friday daily inspiration meetings, meetings for men and women, and faith-based meetings. Second, we create a welcoming community that provides a sense of belonging with a full calendar of events each month. Speaker series, barbecues, holiday celebrations, bowling, sporting events, theater shows, and much more. Thirdly, we provide an opportunity for our alumni to serve both the recovery community and in our local neighborhoods. We offer speaker commitments, chair commitments, mentoring opportunities in our facilities, volunteering at food banks, recovery, and overdose awareness events. We look forward to having you with us again soon. Recovery Centers of America provides inpatient and outpatient treatment and has locations in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Indiana, and Illinois. Recovery Centers of America, or RCA, was founded to break down barriers to expert treatment. We answer the phone and admit patients 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, are in-network with major insurance providers, and provide evidence-based treatment in our world-class facilities. If you or someone you know needs help, call 1-800-RECOVERY and know we are here for you.